Hey, what's happening, folks? Welcome back to the Play to Win podcast. This is Alex, and this week we've got Jared.
Yo.
Josh.
Hi.
And special guest, Ben.
How's it doing, y'all?
Returning here as a guest game guru to talk some Resident Evil 2 remake. But first, we've got some news to talk about. We've got some other things we want to talk about. And I'd love, Ben, just remind the folks out there, the listeners, who you are and why gaming matters to you.
I'm Benjamin Leach. I have known these three guys for quite some time, but I have been a dedicated gamer pretty much my entire life. My wife works for 2K Games, and I've got a lot of thoughts, so we'll get into it.
He's got a lot of thoughts, and you all have to listen to them because we have the microphones right now.
He's going to act on them.
And only a handful more appearances on his punch card, and he becomes an official.
I know, right? He's on his way. We'll have to get you on a couple more times this year, too. Well, let's jump into some news here. Some of the I think the first thing I want to jump into is pretty near and dear to Josh and I's heart, and that is Final Fantasy 16 just released its final DLC, The Rising Tides, and it is officially done, I believe. They're not doing anything else, so we got two DLCs for Final Fantasy 16.
Echoes of the Fallen and The Rising Tide, right?
Yes, sir. So that adds some nice little additional gameplay. I think it's about 12 to 15 hours altogether.
Between the two?
Yeah. They're fairly contained. I've jumped in and finished the first one. I'm in the second one right now. Josh, I know you haven't jumped in. Are you planning on checking these out?
Yeah, I will. Hopefully probably in the next month once it has some downtime. But I mean, I've heard good things. Specifically more about Rising Tide, just because it's more of a narrative, right?
It's much more complete. The Echoes of the Fallen is really just one little area, and one it's kind like a long boss, side quest,
right? Yeah,
kind of. Yeah, there's some story to it. It's interesting. It's just not very deep. There's some new weapons and new items and a few more new mechanics. It's pretty cool though. The Echoes of the Fallen, which I'm a few hours into, is a lot deeper, adds a whole new area.
You mean the Rising Tide?
That's what I meant. Rising Tide. Stellar Blade is out. People seem to be really enjoying this game. It is being rated pretty decently. It's not lighten up the letterboards or anything like that, but it is doing well. Anybody out there planning on playing this game? Jared, Ben, Josh?
If it's conveniently available to me, then yeah.
I might. It's like the PlayStation version right now of I'm blanking on it.
Nier Automata?
Yeah, well, that's PlayStation primarily, but yeah. I was gonna say it's got that same kind of vibe as Nier Automata, but I can't remember it. You know, the witch lady? I can't remember her name.
Bayonetta. I know what you're talking about.
Bayonetta. Yeah, it kind of seems like it's got some of those like main protagonist vibes.
It does have a similar vibe to it, and it is, you know, I think it's more of a pure action game than a lot of newer games are. There's some, obviously, RPG elements. Everything has to have RPG elements today. But
yep.
Ben, are you going to jump into this game at all?
Possibly. You know, this is one of the ones where, I got to make sure that Bernice doesn't get mad at me for playing it. With all the boob physics, you know,
there is a lot of sex appeal in this game, and that is getting a whole lot of talk, probably a lot more discussion than really is warranted. People saying some really ridiculous things, and that is why we can't have nice things. And
love that somebody uttered the phrase boob physics.
Here at the Play to Win podcast, we talk about all the important stuff, Jared.
We're highbrow topic. Okay.
This is very highbrow.
Just energy. Trying to bring up the things that the people want to hear about.
Yeah.
Give the people what they want.
Need the clicks.
Right. That's going to be the headline, the blurb.
Check out the merch store. We will be selling boob physics shirts.
All of it, boob physics.
Oh my gosh, that sells out immediately. The next thing I wanted to talk about are some Fallout updates. We've got a lot of Fallout news. The Fallout TV show on Amazon Prime is absolutely killing it. I think all of us in this group have watched or are watching that show. What are your general takes on it? Just a quick 30 seconds, not over the top. Josh, what are you thinking?
Spoiler alert, it's very gory, but that's not a bad thing. What do you expect? What do you expect with a Fallout TV show? But yeah, people are getting like their heads blown in half by like slug sawn-off shotguns, feet getting crushed by power armor, and then some dude magically regrowing and getting that foot repaired.
Oh, Ben, what are you thinking of the show?
It's everything I wanted it to be. I'm glad that it's canon.
Right,
Alex. I'm sad you haven't finished it yet.
I know. I need to.
The last episode reveals some things that I want to talk about, but maybe we can save that for a different time. But
absolutely. To me, this is everything. I think this is my new preferred way to experience Fallout. I like the games. I really like the games and enjoy them, but they're sub Elder Scrolls for me. I like to go through them and just kind of live in that world for a little while and be done with it. But I think this is absolutely perfect. Jared, what is your thoughts? I know you've put a ton of time into the Fallout universe.
Ideally, like, it's the perfect adaptation of a game to a show. I feel like from the aesthetic, I love how they built out the actual power armor in it. And you and I have been watching
Halo, so good.
And I think that that's a big fucking, like, hey, oh, sorry, I didn't mean to throw that F-bomb out.
That's all right.
I'm normally not one of the cursors on here.
Get in post.
But I think that should be a big indicator to the Halo team, like, hey, guys, there's a certain way to do this.
Before you go on to your comment about that, it makes me sad that this is how they could have done a Halo show. Like, I enjoy Halo. We've talked a lot about that. But if they would have given it as much love, time, and care as they did the Fallout, oh, my God. Sorry, continue your thought.
I love the dark humor of the show. I love its place in the whole Fallout universe, how it's the latest property in it. I love seeing all the little Easter eggs from seeing New Vegas at the end.
Put that in the text chat. So
okay, well, cool. And then you'll see a bunch of really cool Fallout, you know, from 1 to 4 element showing up in it.
Absolutely.
I will say it's gory, but in all fairness, it never lingers on the gore, and I never feel like the gore is the centerpiece. Like a lot of shows or a lot of movies will be gory, yet they like revel in it. Whereas in Fallout, yeah, somebody's head will get blown off, but the camera shifts immediately to something else.
Blowing off, but then they don't
never on it, right? It's centerpiece of the action or the story. It's just
it's an accoutrement.
It is a integral element of at least, you know, most Fallout games anyways.
But that's,
I literally blew someone's head off the other day and that went rolling.
You see their eyeballs shoot off in slow motion.
It's dark. It's funny. It's satirical. Sometimes it's outlandish. In this show, it's touching. Like, there's a lot of touching elements in Fallout. And just the environmental storytelling from the games really translated over to the show. So it's, if you love the show, you'll love the games and vice versa.
Well, I think to that point, that has shown to be fact, because the player count for all Fallout properties is skyrocketing. Fallout 1, 2, 3, New Vegas, 4, and 76 have all seen huge spikes in their player counts. People are going back to re-experience these games after and live in that world after watching the show. So this is a great way to get those get people living in that universe, get people excited while we wait for the next Fallout game to come.
Let me say this for any newbies who are show watchers who want to possibly jump into the games. I know a lot of people are really trolling New Vegas players. Can't really speak to Fallout 1 and 2, but please know that these games are Bethesda games, and what that means is this studio is known for bugginess and quirkiness inherent in their games. So be ready for that.
It's part of, I mean, it's not a bug, Jared. It's a feature.
It's a feature.
I mean, that's basically how it is.
At this point, yeah, but if you're used to a certain standard or if you have a certain expectation of a video game, this might just crush that if you're not ready for it. So please understand.
It mattered less when the dev cycle was less than a decade.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and these games are absolutely massive. Fallout 4 is kind of meant to never end.
Well, and what I love about Fallout 4, and sorry, I know I can harp on this forever, is it's a game where when you get up on a tall hill on the north side of the map and you look south and you see everything, you can go there, which is crazy. Yeah. So yeah, if you love exploration and just getting lost in worlds, mm-hmm. Fallout 3, New Vegas, or Fallout 4, man, do it.
Yeah.
But be ready for quirky bugs.
Absolutely. And along with that, they released a true next-gen update for Fallout 4 that gives it, I think it was already 4K because it had the Series X enhancement. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if it was enhanced on PlayStation or not, though. That may have just been a Microsoft thing. So it was already 4K, at least on the Xbox side. Now it does 4K 60 as well. Mm-hmm. And I was playing through that yesterday, and it looked pretty sweet.
It makes a big difference in playing.
Now, I would be remiss if I didn't mention, though, a lot of PC players are saying, you know, we prefer the mods, so we don't want to update, which that's fair because it does break a lot of mods, and there are a lot of mods on at least the PC side that kind of does what this is trying to do. Anyway,
do they have a time frame on when that might be patched to allow mods?
Well, the mods are still available. The problem is if the mods were built with a certain, it's going to have to be up to the individual modders, because if it was built with certain things in mind, it may have broken it.
So I'm just as a disclaimer here, I've been playing on the Series X on a modded save file, and when they dropped the next gen patch, all it did was undownload. It just removed my mods. I just had to re-download them and put them in the same load order, and it booted right up like nothing was the problem. Now there was a few mods that I put into that
I used to use that aren't supported anymore, and therefore they don't technically work. So one of my favorite was instead of a pit boy, you had a pit pad, so it wasn't past your arm, and that thing won't work allegedly, which made me kind of sad.
But I think that's what a lot of the complaints are, is that some of the mods have been broken, whereas a lot of them still work, because I had the same experience, Ben, where I was able to load up new mods and they were fine. You just have to be careful. You may have some favorite mods that no longer work with this update.
And if you're new to the game and start modding the game, please understand that this isn't part of Bethesda, and these are just free things that individuals have made. So some of them might not work.
Yeah.
Or some of them might not be up to the quality or standard that you're expecting.
And we'll move on, because I think we're going to talk Fallout at a later date on another episode. So I don't want to harp on it too much, but I just wanted to make sure the listeners out there are aware of what's going on. The other big update, this is all part of the rumor mill, is that it sounds like potentially, just maybe, PlayStation may be thinking of bringing Helldivers 2 to Xbox.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes me happy.
That is exciting. That would be a huge game for Xbox players to get. I think it would be great for the game, in my opinion, and a win for PlayStation because of how many new players they would get on a type of game, game as a service game.
And also, too, going a step higher, is it's also a win for the gaming industry, and it's kind of would be a start of, we have all these first-party titles, but we can start sharing some of them.
Yeah.
And getting away from this arms race kind of era. And I feel hopefully we'll get to a point to where you know, I have an Xbox, but I will pay $15 extra to play God of War on it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So in any case, we can have that discussion at a later time, but I just wanted
none of you guys have played it yet, have you?
No, actually, Ben, tell us what we're missing out on, what we could potentially experience if it comes. Well, I mean, two of us have
if you will, dive into hell.
Right? Yeah.
A brief dive into hell.
It's the better Starship Troopers simulator, but you know, it's not PvP. You're with your buddies, you know, taking on a whole battlefield, and it is the most cinematic experience I think you'll ever have. And it's wildly funny. I think half the time you end up just killing your own teammates on accident, and everyone just laughs about it. it's wild. I mean, it gets really hard when you get up there. Like the most overwhelming game you'll ever play, and that's probably on, like, as soon as you start getting into some one of the harder difficulties, boy, do they ramp up the chaos.
Love it.
It's wild, but I recommend it. I have an obsession. It's actually the background of my phone right now is.
Oh, nice. So, it's just crazy how popular this game is, despite, I mean, like the first one I think was well received, but this game is a complete reinvention of what it means to be Helldivers. And they've really caught lightning in a bottle, it seems, for now with that. So I'm excited to see what it could look like and how it could grow if they add a whole new gaming community to it.
Absolutely.
Well, with that, why don't we jump into the topic of the day, which is Resident Evil 2, the remake, or Remake 2, as we like to call it, just for shorthand here. So Resident Evil 2 came out on January 25th, 2019. It is developed by Capcom. It is on PlayStation 4, 5, Xbox One, Nintendo Switch, Series X, Xbox Series consoles as well. And the Metacritic for this game is, I mean, it's fantastic. It really sets the bar for what it means to be a remake. We're hovering at right around the 90 to the low to mid 90s on Metacritic. So very well received. And the community is right around a 8.9, I think, is the overall community score. Universal acclaim, generally favorable across the board. The original came out January 1998. And that was on the original PlayStation, also from Capcom. And it has kind of evolved since that.
Alex, what's the engine that the remakes are built on?
RE engine.
Because I think that really should be overstated. Yeah. Because that engine is fantastic.
Yeah, Capcom has gotten a lot of praise for the RE engine. That's what they use for all the remakes, starting with Resident Evil 2.
Resident Evil games, right?
What?
The first person, like 7, 8, and
9. Oh, yeah, I believe, yeah, all the new Resident Evil are 8. Done in that as well. I'd have to confirm that.
Yeah,
they are.
I don't know I think they started using it. Did they start using it with, was 7 the first game
that used it?
That came out before Resident Evil 2, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, I think that would have been the first one, and they're like, hey, this engine's so great, it's easy to use. Let's go back and give the people what they want and remake some games.
Sorry, I didn't want to sidetrack, but
no, you're good.
I think that's worth noting just because of how groundbreaking and beautiful that engine is.
No, that's a really good point. Before we jump into our discussion of the game, because we've got lots to say on this one, I'm going to jump in and check in with the gaming community. I've pulled up a thread from the Resident Evil 2 Remake subreddit. The question from Cryo Manco: for the ones who played the OG RE2, how do you feel about the remake? So we're going to go in and kind of see what some people think. I think the only one of us that has played the original is Ben. Is that correct? Anybody else played the remake or the original?
Negativo.
Okay.
So I was 12 when it came out.
I'm excited to hear what Ben thinks about this as well. But I've watched some videos and it's pretty cool to think about. Mr. Raccoon says both are 10 for 10 masterpieces, but RE2R is my favorite game of all time. Nothing Gold 237. OG RE2 rocks. It aged like wine. Still playing time to time. And Remake is also a great game because they kept atmosphere of the original. Fuck, now I want to play it again. I get it. We're re-experiencing this. I just finished this and I kind of want to jump back in. RE2R is really good, but OG is god tier. And there's a comment. This is the correct response. Alaska _ Pipeliner. The remake is a much better game, and I love the OG RE2. Got Tofu, but never beat it with him. Technology has come a long way. And we'll be talking about that because just the graphical overhaul is amazing. Thought the game was so Lost Bastille. I thought the game was good. Unfortunately, the lack of a zapping system made the second run worthless. I don't know what zapping is. Apparently, actions in A would affect scenario B. Okay, so that was really one of the more, we can talk about this, but that was one of the more kind of awesome groundbreaking things that this original game did. I don't know if you guys didn't play it. I don't know how familiar you are, but depending on how you played, who you played through the game with originally, mm-hmm. impacted how your second playthrough would go, because it saved the things you did in the original playthrough. So when you went back to those areas as the second playthrough, they would have happened.
Interesting.
And when you beat it, playthrough A, as for example, as Leon, when you go back in through as Claire, as your second playthrough, it's all the places. It's as if Leon had actually already been there, and you find things in different places or stuff like that. And then it also impacts your playthrough. Your playthrough is different if you play through again, starting from scratch as Claire and then play as Leon.
Cool.
But it's actually really, really cool mechanic that was not something used back then.
So essentially there's two different iterations per character of the game.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know how many endings there are in the original, if there's the multiple or not.
There are. I don't know enough details on them, but there are.
So the replayability even of a game that old is pretty impressive, I think.
Absolutely. In 1998, to have multiple playthroughs. I mean, this is already, what, a 9-ish hour game?
Right.
So you're basically making it to 36 hours with the same content, just slight differences.
Yeah.
Comments about it being extremely faithful.
Sorry, that was gross. It's
terrifying. Definitely a masterpiece in its own. Good game. Oh, someone here. This is a hot take. Conra 578 said this, not me. RE2R is a good game, but ultimately a bad remake. The story is a downgrade. Removal of Ada's original character arc. So big thing is just kind of some changes in the store the gameplay. And that is something I've seen from others, is the kind of dumbing down of certain systems, and they really like streamline some of the story. I don't know that that was actually a negative, but I could see how some people think that. So let's start our discussion. What do you guys think of overall? What do you guys think of RE2 Remake?
It's scary.
It is terrifying.
I feel like the, obviously because the original controls were the lovely, they were tank controls in the original, correct?
Yeah.
Yes.
That's why I never stuck with those games.
Moving, which they're very polarizing, those tank controls. but the controls in this are very sharp. I feel like the gunplay in this game is tight and it's done perfectly. So like how you would have envisioned it back in the day, I feel like they executed, and you're really getting what you were dreaming of at the time, or what you thought it was at the time. I think that, and I know we're going to get into this conversation, but how they programmed Mr. X in this, once he's finally after you, is so freaking genius. Like the fact that you could be on the other side of the station, but he's still rummaging around somewhere and you can hear it, and like brilliant. And then
hearing those giant heavy flopping footsteps.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, then, I'm not leaving the dark room. I'm staying in here.
And when he like shows up and you're not expecting it, it literally will make you yelp. Like, he is terrifying, and he's really quiet when he wants to be, which makes him a jerk. But also too, I feel like the parts of the game that they the original game that they translated to this one, they did so well. So it captures what the original, I feel like they were getting at, and it translates it into just the modern era, and it puts it into a format that makes it obviously way more accessible for more folks to jump into. And this is the gold standard of remakes, and you know, I am forever grateful to it because I got my Dead Space remake out of this. So,
oh my god.
So this game is incredible, in my opinion.
Ben, what are your overall impressions of Resident Evil 2 Remake?
So, having been a fan of the original and played the original, I mean, yes, this is how you do a remake. And I think that, you know, you really need to understand the word remake, because there's a lot of people who have remasters. There's a lot of games that were just like, hey, let's update the graphics.
The waters are muddy these days.
Right. Yeah.
No, but that's what a remaster is. It's just like, let's make it look modern. And the thing is a remake is a reimagining. It's let's take the parts that were there from 1998 and put it together in a package that's, you know, from 2000. I think it's 2019 that this one came out. So right now, which is kind of wild, it's already half a decade old, but it looks phenomenal. I mean, I remember it is frightening. The original was frightening for, you know, the time, and it was more just that kind of eeriness that some of those older games can give off, just because they have a little bit of an uncanny valley. But in this sense, this was frightening because it was actually scary, in the same way that like a horror movie is actually scary. Mr. X, I think it had very similar mechanics. If you ever played Alien Isolation, very similar mechanics to how that alien worked, which was really smart, actually. If you know anything about the AI around that entity, the alien entity, like it was kind of groundbreaking, and a lot of other games have tried to recreate it in terms of how that played. And you know, that one came out probably 2014, so I wouldn't doubt that, you know, Resident Evil took a page from, you know, Alien Isolation on how that worked. But overall, phenomenal. Like, I loved it. I loved how they did the character models. They hit all the major story beats. The William Birkin turning into one of the tyrants. Was just phenomenal. I always loved how the progression of his mutations every time he came, you know, to fight him. They stuck with the formula. I mean, they didn't change it. So, I mean, as long as you go from like the whatever Resident Evil, like you go from the streets to whatever like mansion or like main area, and then you go into some sort of like in between area, and then you go to a lab. And every Resident Evil follows that structure.
Three areas.
Yeah, three main areas, and then you know you always end up in the Umbrella Lab at the end, and you have to fight some sort of big mutated bad gross creature that's has amazing art design, and then you have some sort of like blow up the lab and escape situation. And they didn't stray from the formula, and you know, why would you? It has been working.
This is one of the games that set the formula, right?
Yeah. I mean, if you play the original, I mean, it still kind of follows that,
right? You're right. It's got the house, and then it goes into the other areas, and then you end up in the lab and the underground area in the lab.
Yeah.
Josh, I'm curious, what are your thoughts on the graphical representation of this game? I mean, this game has a certain look to it.
It's great. I mean, I guess first and foremost, it's great. As we talked about, the RE engine is fantastic. But what's truly adding to the ambiance and kind of the fear that the game drives is just how realistic it is, in the sense that it's a you know, a city, Raccoon City, has been destroyed essentially by this virus. You're rolling into this place in the middle of the night, thunderstorm, power's out. You have to go through a police station that's full of these G-virus infected police officers, civilians, without really any...
The occasional liquor.
Yeah, the occasional liquor, dogs. But the power, electricity, that is kind of intermittent in the sense that it makes it hard to see things.
It's dark in this game.
You've got a flashlight that is ultimately used to help you see, but it has a intended effect, but probably to the chagrin of the player, of providing jump scares. You turn in direction and you see Mr. X and the light just reflecting off of his little hat and his head, or just you see a hallway full of zombies and you're like, oh god, how am I going to navigate this? You can fire a bullet, you know, stab them with your knife, stick a grenade in their mouth, and then hopefully you can get past them if you're trying to conserve time. And
to that point, it's Josh, it's really like I'm trying to conserve ammo because it's scarce at times in this game, depending on how difficult that, you
every interaction
that,
yeah, is
that
kind
gets
of
me,
like, how do you want to like go in? Am I conserving? Like, anyway, sorry.
Well, in that conservation, that's kind of what I wanted to get onto primarily, the inventory and, you know, resource management in a game like this where, you know, Resident Evil is known for that. And it's the main other driver other than the aesthetic as to what causes the true sense of dread and fear is like, I have a finite amount of resources until I come across, you know, upgrades that make it more easy to traverse the world that I'm in. But, you know, it follows, I think, a similar formula to Resident Evil 7, right? In that it's, you start out with eight, and then you can add pouches, right?
How many spaces that. You got?
Yeah. And ultimately,
It depends on if you're Leon or Claire, I think. I think Claire has more space than Leon.
It always depends on the character. Okay. Yeah.
But so that, you know, obviously adds to some of that element. And then, you know, what's nice is that you can upgrade your weapons, but at the end of the day, it's sort of a trade-off there because while, yes, you've upgraded your pistol or your shotgun, now the upgrade in all likelihood is going to take up an additional slot in your inventory. So it's a trade-off for resources. Like, you're more equipped to combat the assailants, but you don't have enough space maybe to restore your health now.
And to that point, Josh, I felt like it pressures you into wanting to actually explore more of the area around you because there may be upgrades or there may be more pockets space that you get that if you don't check all the little areas, you're going to miss these things. And so that forces you into really terrifying situations. Another thing I'll add to this is this game, different than the original, is just because you've cleared out an area already, that doesn't mean there won't be a new zombie there later, or something crashing through the windows, or suddenly liquors appear, or something
like
that.
Did you grab those boards and put them up
God,
the
windows? you have to board up the windows. Go ahead, Ben.
And I will say that that was still kind of in the original one. And actually, if you go back and look at Resident Evil 1, if you didn't dispose of the zombie bodies later,
you gotta stomp them or burn them.
Yeah, you have to burn them. If you didn't do that, they'd come back as a different enemy, a worse enemy in the second half of the game. Yeah.
Yeah,
so after a certain event, they would come back stronger.
And that's the thing about
harder, better,
faster. I think that's the difference between this one and that one is this one. Yes, the zombies will get back up, and in the first one, they may come back to life as worse enemies. But this one also added the fact that they just may have new enemies show up in that area, either coming through the windows or there'll be a liquor that just has suddenly appeared in that area. So it's less predictable.
You just knock them on the ground and you take out your knife and you go,
Stab. Yeah. A little Mr. Stabby.
Cut their head.
It took me a while to get that pattern down that, hey, you need to make sure double tap is not enough in this game. That brings me to, I don't want to spend too much time on complaints because there's still so much I want to talk about this game. But one of my complaints about this game is sometimes the zombies feel a little bit bullet spongy.
Yep.
I mean, I think that to your point earlier too, this is a survival horror game, and you are meant to feel stressed for resources, and you're meant to make some hard decisions, particularly about your inventory space. And I think in the DNA of a survival horror, you are not. Yeah, I think the bullet sponginess of an enemy is, you know, it's not a bug, it's a feature.
Yeah.
It's one of those ones where you waste your ammo on that zombie, or maybe you should have just run past him.
Yeah.
They want you to feel somewhat powerless, right?
Yeah. Their heads aren't very grenade spongy, though.
No. I like it. That's one of my favorite mechanics when they jump on you and your reaction command is to shove a grenade into their mouth. Just boom. That's always fantastic. Have you guys seen the comparison of the graphics of this game versus the original?
By like scene by scene, or what do you mean?
I don't even think that's comparable. It's like saying
it's like not
on
fair.
Nintendo 64. Was,
no, I just
modern day games.
I think it is so incredible how much they upgraded. I mean, it's like to me. It's like Final Fantasy VII versus Final Fantasy VII Remake. It's that high of a jump. I mean, this game almost looks like real life. It's incredible.
Yeah.
And the original, don't get me wrong, the original was fantastic for 1998. They had real-looking characters. It wasn't like the polygons of Final Fantasy VII, which came out a year before this. They did a really, really solid job, especially for the time, on the original's graphics, but...
Also, do we want to maybe transition to like the story or?
Yeah, that's a good call, Josh. Jared, what are your thoughts on kind of the story play of this game? You know, you get your two main characters and you can pick and play through each one.
Yeah, I just like how there's slightly different story beats between the two, and there's different advantages and disadvantages to playing one or the other, as there's always been with Resident Evil games. I really like how they have developed both Claire and Leon in this game, and they could have made them a little goofy if they wanted to, as in past games.
Well, you know, Leon still has his one-liners every now and then.
He's like, son of a bitch.
But that's to be expected from Leon, though. And I feel like if they would have taken that away from him, then it wouldn't have been fucking Leon. It would have been just some pretty blonde dude. But I really like storylines like the movie Go and stuff, where you're only getting part of the story. And so like you do have those little crossovers between the two of them as well, as they're both going through their through their time in the station and the lab. I think that the way that they expanded upon the story and brought it and made it more cinematic versus, you know, the limitations of the old system, they couldn't make it the cinematic. I thought it was awesome. Like Ben mentioned, the doctor coming through in that version,
Birkin.
Like those interactions and those transformations, man, they were so visceral. It's just so painful and real, and there's all the kinetic, like when he transformed, you would hear the bones breaking.
Yeah.
Like that just sticks with you. You know?
And it was cool because you kind of see him as a monster, like from the get go, and then later on you see that it's him.
Of the man still mixed throughout this type, and so like you almost feel for him, but at the same time you're disgusted by him, and it's. It's so good. Like this game again, like I can't give it enough credit for how they adapted you know, a story limited by the hardware at the time and really fleshed it out. And I feel like they made it what it should have been. You know, I don't want to discount the feedback that they cut out the Ava part, and that wasn't satisfying to folks from the original game. And so I can't speak to that. But from my knowledge of the first game and from the Let's Plays I've seen of it through this game, I feel like, you know, it's, again, what a remake should be. When
you get to play as her, albeit very limited, right?
As Ada, yeah,
you do.
But you can play. I guess I didn't play the original, but I didn't mind it that much. I honestly, in most games, it's kind of annoying when they take you away from the character you've been playing for the whole time. So I don't really mind that too much personally. What did you guys think about the?
They left Hunk in here. Did they leave Tofu in this game too?
Yeah, yep. Tofu. Yep. Tofu's in.
So that's even better.
Right. All the extra content where you just try to run through and not get eaten.
Yeah.
What did you guys think about the twist? I've read that there's some changes because of this too, but the twist with Ada Wong towards the end.
Oh, where she's like just a private contractor, or something?
Not like truly an FBI agent.
Yeah. I mean, I think it makes her a little more interesting because. Just the saucy agent showing up.
Yeah.
It's like, eh. It adds like it makes her a little less comical. And I shouldn't say comical, but like less of a caricature.
It's more, it rounds her out a little bit.
Yeah. It makes her character a little more believable, right?
Yeah.
And so I thought it was a great way to do it.
I liked the fact that so in my opinion, I saw that coming a mile away, because why is she trying to get the G virus instead of just destroy it if she's working for the FBI?
Right.
Unless the FBI wants to create their own super soldiers, which I totally would get, but that's not what she's kind of making it out to sound like, and she's not like trying to make it sound like, oh, I'm just trying to find a cure or anything. It's like, no, I want this because some other people want this. It's like that sounds sketchy to me. Also,
for she's working alongside Wesker, so she's kind of working with like the baddie, like, but Wesker's like the big bad in the whole series.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and that's definitely more prevalent, I think, within, like, you learn more about that in Resident Evil 4, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we, you know, that's probably something we should consider too. I don't think we have, but I mean, we should play the RE4.
Yeah, that's on the list. I mean, I think all the RE remakes are good enough that we should cover them. I think 3 is a quick one that comes right, that's on Game Pass now too, which we didn't mention. This game is on Game Pass,
which is incredible.
It is incredible. The I like the environmental storytelling in this game too, which is something that I think this game maybe didn't start but pioneered, and it's carried on through its successors like Dead Space, where you listen to a videotape or watch a videotape or listen to an audio file or read something, and then you learn more about the world. Yeah. Like that's how you learn about how the virus mutates and how it actually got out, and you learn little things like Chris is on vacation off somewhere else, or he's off somewhere else, and that
you, babes.
Yeah, yeah.
These other punch and boulders.
Well, and there's more to the environmental storytelling too than just like the logs, like with Leon's, like the party in the break room, like, you know,
yeah. Welcome
Leon and his whole coming to the police department. Yeah. That should have been his first day. Like, I love that little thread in there because it gives him a reason to be there, right?
Yeah, to that point, like the environmental storytelling, you know, you come across it primarily because you're going through the game trying to navigate it, but by solving these puzzles, right?
Yeah.
We haven't even talked about it yet. So you're ultimately interacting with the environment to try to find ways to advance and move forward by solving puzzles.
That's a good segue, Josh. What did you guys think about the puzzle design in this game?
It was balanced. And that's like the biggest compliment I can give puzzles in a game such as this, because, you know, I feel like there's some games that have so many mechanics, such as like the inventory management, the encounter, you know, decisions. Am I going to sit here and waste bullets? Do I run or run past them? And then they'll end up throwing puzzles at you, which just end up being just another huge thing to consider. But I feel like they found that sweet spot of, you have to think about this, but you don't have to think so hard that it's taxing on your brain. I just think that they found a really nice balanced sweet spot for it.
Ben, what'd you have to say?
I always loved the puzzles in these games as well. I do think that they were fun. You know, go find the bolt clippers, but you also have to have a gas can that's full and run across the map because there's a different, you know, key card that you need. But I always find it kind of humorous because I think of it from like a real world practicality.
Yeah, right.
Like in order to, like, well, we got to go up and do maintenance in the garage. In order to do that, you have to go over to the chief's office and get four little hexagons and put them in the thing. But one of them's on the roof. Like, but you have to do that.
Why did
every
you leave
time.
That there, man?
Like, it sounds like it's the most inefficient police station ever. Like,
why'd you leave the stuff in the clock tower? This doesn't make any sense.
You need the passcode to the secret room in order to get the crank to get the watering hose for the.
Why is there even a secret room? You know, like,
by the way, you need something in this safe. Though.
It drives engagement of the gamer. It sort of forces immersion, because as you're going through the game and you see that freaking crank laying against the wall, you're like, okay, I don't have room for that now, but I'm going to need that at some point. And so that forces you to make that mental note of it.
Yeah.
So,
this T-handle could be lodged into the base of a zombie skull.
some of the things in the environment are absolutely ridiculous, but I think that is also some part of the charm, because this game is terrifying and there's a lot of tension, and some of these things just subtly or slightly help cut the tension enough to keep you moving forward.
Yep.
So when I have to go get the different chess pieces to open this door, it's like, yeah, this would never happen in the real world, but it helps me deal with the fact that I'm like in this terrifying underground sewer location and there's these really terrifying organic
monster. Walk through all this poopy water.
And so that.
And you got to blow up a giant alligator.
It's kind of like the idea. Oh god.
Four
of
them. Well, that's what you're not. Yeah, yeah. Not
it's like that idea in the old dramas where we cut the tension with a little bit of humor in the middle. It's the same thing with this game. It's like, yeah, it's terrifying. It's so terrifying. We're gonna cut the tension a little bit with these slightly goofy things, and I'm glad they kept that.
Yeah, I mean, it would be Resident Evil without that, though. Like, they toned it down a lot, but it's still part of a Resident Evil game, is that quirkiness.
Honestly, though,
you have to have it.
Honestly, though, I think the puzzle solving was subpar in this game compared to like Resident Evil 1. I think the first Resident Evil had better puzzle solving.
Yeah.
Better puzzles. This game had puzzles, but I don't think anything was particularly challenging or deep. It was more of, hey, go find these three little coin medallion things. It's like, okay, cool. Yeah. And all the answers are in my book. And the thing that makes it hard is this is scratched out, so I can't actually see what the symbol is. So it's process of elimination. Okay, that's fine.
The main point of this game is to provide a cinematic kind of.
I agree.
It does that. It drives that very well. The puzzle solving is more of just the true vehicle to kind of advance you from one area to the other.
That's a good point, Josh. I that's a really good point. It's this game is so much about the cinematics, which I think is more so than the original, because it's so pretty to look at. I mean, in a terrifying way, but really.
Well, and then speaking of terrifying, you know, out of everything in this game that could be terrifying, the liquors, the zombies, Mr. X, You know, I found the most terrifying thing in the game to be the police chief. Very, very uncomfortable segment of the game with this individual.
With Sherry Birkin as a little kid.
Yeah. Cursing at a child, calling her a bitch, and just like, what are you doing? Like, I'm just like, what is going on here? Very tense, kind of rapey vibes you're getting a little bit. Yeah. And then the whole orphanage section of the game is just, I think the orphanage is, no, never mind. Is it?
It was not in the original.
It's
new content.
But that's cool thing about that is any post-apocalyptic, any good post-apocalyptic media is you have to have that terrifying human element and what happens to the humans once society falls.
Yeah.
And so, like, I feel the first game, other than the silly, you know, corporation theme and stuff like that, they didn't really get it on a personal level. And I feel like this added that into this game.
So,
experience.
And then the whole thing
I'll comment about that too is that you don't. I only played through as Leon, and you don't get that experience at all. Sherry's not a character for Leon until the very end,
although she's with Claire,
you don't see the police chief at all because you can't even get in to that room.
Is it kind of implied
they wanted to save Leon from having an annoying young girl following him
in this game because it happens in Resident Evil.
Wait till 4, yeah,
but. Is it kind of implied after you play Claire's story that the ladder is dropped by Sherry to Leon? Is that kind of what's implied?
I think the ladder. Which ladder are you talking about? I know, like,
after you fight the William Birkin, I think for the first time.
No, I thought it was implied. No, maybe I didn't
Ada,
think so.
Ada drop, perhaps. I guess. I
no, you didn't really know. They do imply that, Josh. They do.
Okay.
I didn't think it was Sherry. I thought it was either the doctor that was already there or Ada. Now it's different with the rocket launcher that comes at the last fight.
Yeah.
That one is implied to be Claire or Sherry, I thought.
Wait, well, Alex, you didn't play Claire's playthrough, did you?
No, that's true. I didn't play Claire's
playthrough. They do hint that it's Sherry Birkin that helps knock the ladder down. So Josh, you're right.
Okay.
Well, and then kind of going back to the orphanage, you know, I did want to touch upon that it's basically just described that Umbrella is kind of experimenting on these children, right? Mm-hmm. Which is also just extremely disturbing.
Right.
That, you know, they're finding homes for these children. They're coming, and then they're coming back to the orphanage, essentially scarred and experimented upon and probably infected with this G virus.
I mean, I think you can't have a Resident Evil game without an out of control, you know, corporate undertone. I mean, the Umbrella Corporation, you know, it's supposed to be this, you know, kind of satire on unchecked, you know, capitalism, you know, unchecked corporatism, where they, you know, where the immorality, the profits from, you know, warmongering and creating bioweapons is more important than our actual humanity. And that is really the underlying theme on all of it. But, you know, you got to have that goofy silliness to it. And I think that also is, and to be completely honest, I mean, it makes things a little lighthearted because they have that goofy silliness, the Leon's one-liners and just kind of some of the overtop silliness. But, you know, underneath it all, there's still a very big, like, you know, comment on society throughout all of this, which I think is important. And if you're missing that in a lot of these games, and in a lot of games, I think that it does kind of get lost. You know, I don't think you're truly understanding, you know, a lot of what the developers are trying to say. And I kind of meandered there, but yeah.
Well, no, it's definitely timely because we did talk about Fallout, you know,
at
the start of the show, and that's definitely at play within the within the show Fallout and then Fallout universe in general.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The corporations are kind of getting a little too bloated and powerful, and without any oversight, leads to the apocalypse or rampant experimentation and zombies. That's what we're going towards, people. But that's the thing. You can do that in a video game world where it's extremely fantastical, right? Like, there aren't real zombies, you know, at least not that we know of. Not until Umbrella gets their hands on them. So, you know, it kind of allows us to explore. It allows us to kind of explore these kind of fundamental human characteristics that, like Jared was talking about before. When the world goes to shit, how do people respond? And it's not always pretty. And people are capable of that. And these games allow us to explore what humans are capable, both the good and the bad. You know, we've got the bad things with, like, the police chief, but we got the good side of things with Leon and Claire and how they interact. And then you've got your kind of intermediaries, kind of like Ada.
Well, yeah, right? Like that. You're saying the spectrum of that. You see basically almost every plot on that line.
Yeah.
In a game.
All right. Well, let's jump. One last thing I'll talk about, then we'll kind of jump to our final thoughts and we'll move on. But the influence, I think we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about the influence this game had on later games. Obviously, Resident Evil set the pace and whatnot. But this game, a lot of things that you see in this game end up in later survival horror games. Jared, you and I are both big fans of the Dead Space games. Can you talk a little bit about how you see this was this influence that series?
First of all, just the overall using the environment as a character and how you navigate that environment really kind of sets the tone and the pace, and you're never comfortable. Like, even when you feel confident in the mechanics and your execution of being able to dispatch of or get out of situations, you're still not comfortable, because in Dead Space specifically, you know, you're looking at that vent as you're getting closer to it, or you're listening to that rattle and you're like, is something gonna pop out at me, or am I gonna be okay? So you're just always on edge, and I feel like Resident Evil is the property that kind of presented that to you. The dog hallway in the first game is, you know, the just chef's kiss of moments like that. The lighting, just the overall aesthetic, the characters. I mean, honestly, the story beat of Dead Space is very similar to the story beat of Resident Evil. You have this giant, super powerful entity, being Unitology, be it Umbrella, and they stumble upon this means of transformation of a human body, and they think that it's going to lead to something bigger, and they're furthering the issues and making it worse, and you have a single person or a single group of people trying to get through the situation and make it better. So really, it's a very similar story beat as well. I've never really thought about it that way.
There's also a lot. Go ahead, Ben.
And the types of enemies, too. Like, you have your lower enemies, you have your big enemies, you have your tyrants. Like, there's the enemies that you can't kill in Dead Space. So it's really, you have your inventory management. Granted, Dead Space is way more forgiving than Resident Evil is in inventory.
For sure. Ben, but what were you
going to
say?
Go for it. Oh, no, and I think that once again, also, you get the themes of unchecked capitalism. You get the planet crackers. They're coming out here. You've got these giant megacorps that are, you know, galaxy-wide, that are literally eating planets to, you know, further human civilization, and because of it has massive consequences. And then going all the way into the third game, where literally the end of not just the world, but like the end of the galaxy is happening, because, you know, all of these necromorphs have spread across like every world. And yeah, so it just kind of follows all those same threads. So I mean, I'm definite in ingredients there. And no, yeah, and the remake in general, like I'm a huge Dead Space fan as well. Just chef's kiss. Like yeah. they really hit the nail on the head, and they expanded on some things that I think that really needed to be expanded on, particularly Isaac's relationship with his wife, that, you know, I think is kind of lightly touched on in the original, but they really dive into it this and kind of, you know, really messes with you a lot more, which I love that aspect to it. I think the only difference here is Dead Space does not have any humor. No. Dead Space is serious.
It is absolutely terrifying the whole way through.
Dark. It is gritty. It is way bloodier, like way gorier. And which is kind of tough to do. I mean, like you think Resident Evil, yeah, gory, 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 but no, Dead Space turns it up to 11.
Ben, and to your point, sorry, going back to the relationship with Nicole in the game, in Dead Space, and sorry, I know this is a Resident Evil conversation, but I feel like the original game, as far as like building on that, was limited by the hardware. But they really get the real trauma of Isaac through this remake. And while before he was that silent protagonist, in this you feel like he's a person, and he's a really flawed, screwed up person. And I feel like you get that better in this remake.
Absolutely. 100% agree.
The last thing I'll comment on is to both Jared and Ben's points. There's a lot of DNA that carried from this game into both the subsequent Resident Evil games and the Dead Space games. And there's straight up story beats that are, there's obvious things that like straight up story beats. And then there's the less obvious things too, just like how you interface with the world and how you engage. So this game is, you know, without this game, I don't think we have a survival horror series like we do now. We just don't have those same kind of games.
Well, and this is a bit of a sidebar, but do you guys know what the task was from the EA Visceral team for Dead Space and why the game is the way it is? And it was to create a game with no HUD, no heads up display. That was literally,
I know, it's so cool. Huh. It's so cool how they did that.
Yeah, it's, as you notice, there is no HUD. It's all
on your armor, right?
Yeah.
Or his gun.
There's a little like thing where like your gun has like the ammo and like a hologram, but
your menu's a hologram, like it's practical, it's part of a suit.
Yeah. So all of it is integrated into like the systems, like you would if you were actually in a situation like that. So.
Yeah, it's very cool how they did that. Well, we're going to skip what else we've been playing today. Let's jump into video game Guess Who, and then we will wrap up. I have picked one character from Resident Evil 4. It is your job as a team to figure out who that character is and the fewest number of questions you can ask. We have limited it to 20 questions. I will keep track moving forward. All right, go for it.
Do you play as this character?
No, you do not.
Okay.
Too easy, Jared.
This character a villain?
It had to be done.
No, this character is not a villain.
Okay. Is this character a woman?
No, this character is not a woman.
Is this character a human?
Yes.
Okay. Is this character...
Say that again, Josh. You cut out.
Is this character a police officer?
Yes. That's 5.
Is this character injured?
Yes.
I know what it is. I forgot his name, though.
Yeah, I forget his name too.
It's the black guy you meet at the very beginning when you first enter the police station.
You can use.
I know who his name is.
You can use internet resources to.
Who is Marvin Brannig?
Marvin is good. Marvin is correct. That is the police officer you meet when you get to the police station who is injured. And later turns into a zombie, but I figured it would be misleading if I said
I wouldn't call that a villain.
Yeah, I figured it would be misleading if I said it was he was not human and or not a villain or and or was a villain. So you guys got it in 7 questions. Good job. Great teamwork. So with that, let's wrap things up. This has been the Play to Win podcast. We appreciate you hanging out with us this week and this month talking Resident Evil 2. I think the next game we're going to cover will be Fallout 4. Thanks to the, you know, rave reviews of the show, the update to the game, and the a lot of folks jumping in, we decided to jump in and we're going to talk about that as well. You can look forward to that in about a month or so.
Are we going to split like a conversation on that with the show and game? Or?
Yeah, we may talk a little bit about the game, but a little bit about the show, but it should mostly be the game. We might do a special where we talk about the show. We can talk about that off air, though.
So you got to finish it first, Alex.
I know, I got to finish it. So if you want to reach out to us and talk with us, engage with us, we encourage that. You can hit us up on play2winpod@gmail.com. You can hit us up at x.com at pod_win. And please leave us a review. Leave us a like. If you like us, tell all your friends. If you hate us, tell all your enemies. You know, they deserve the punishment of us, the game gurus, in their ears and thinking that things will be great for them. With that,
and if you think Alex should owe you money for the content we've provided you today, then hit him up. For his
if please you write, think Alex owes please us, write your congressman. Please write your congressman.
Or right. Congresswoman.
Or your congressperson. I think that's a better way. We should start saying congressperson now. With that, this has been the Play to Win podcast. Thank you. See you next time.
Bye. Later.